College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
It was supposed to be the biggest weekend of the college football season. Turns out it was so far. We got an upset, not the one we were expecting. More on Georgia in a moment. The next 7 weeks are lining up to be so much fun. Also in the podcast, we're going to tap into our listeners. Your questions for Herbie coming up, as he does every Monday. Kirk Herbstreit joining us now to discuss what he saw from the weekend. Herbie, first off, I got to know the names of the Golden Retrievers. Tell me more about these two guys.
Oh, man. Those are my guys. Ben is, he's Mufasa. He's 5 years old. He's like the king of the house. He does whatever he wants to do. In fact, when the latest thing I put up on Twitter was him sitting, it's like an ottoman.
Yep.
But he thinks it's his throne. So when he's hanging out in the family room, he just kind of climbs up there and literally he watches TV, you know, with me, very inquisitive with what's, whether it's TVG, he likes to watch the horse racing or whatever comes on. He'll be dialed in. And then the wild younger one is Theo, who both of them are Golden Retrievers. From the same breeder, we actually went to New Jersey to find them. So we flew over, found this breeder, and brought him back. One, like I said, one's five and one's two. But yeah, that we're big Golden Retrievers fans and big dog fans.
I love it. House. Yeah. I love it, and I bring it up because I saw one of them, and I the way you described it, it seemed like Ben was just chilling with you yesterday while watching football, and Theo was like, all about
he's like, what's the TV. Going on? Yeah, let's run, let's go. You know,
how do they get along? Do they get along well?
Well, when they first came in, Ben was the established authority figure in the house, and Theo came in as a young puppy, and right away the older one had to establish that there's some ground rules. you could come around me, but depending on the time of the day, I might respond a little differently. And then once he set the ground rules up, they've gotten along just fine. So now they become, you know, like best friends. They wrestle, I don't know, a third of the day, and they sleep two thirds of the day. So that's pretty much their layout.
That's the best life in the world. Dogs are the best.
So no doubt.
I appreciated that video is when I saw that. You had something last week where they're both knocked out sleeping under the blanket. Now, and yesterday watching football, I'm like, man, I want their life.
I know. I have an office here in my house, and usually I'm sitting at my desk, and I have these two chairs that are right across from my desk. And usually one's in one and one's in the other looking at me, and I'll have to put that up because it's funny. It's like meeting of the minds, you know, we're having a big power hour meeting about what's happening in college football, and I'm getting their takes on Florida State and Clemson and what happened with OU in Texas. It's like they're giving me their feedback on their thoughts, like we're going to do here today on the podcast.
Uh-huh. Nothing better than those guys. Yeah. And we're going to get to the conversations, of course, what it looks like now, the lay of the land, as we've got seven more weeks. But I want to get your initial thoughts, especially after the AP poll came out yesterday, where they believe LSU, and they make the jump. And we don't often see that from the AP poll, but they've seen enough to put LSU at number two. What's your top six right now?
I still have Ohio State at one. You know, I know they had a bye, and I know that it's easy to react to what you see from week to week. But I continue, and I think a lot of other people, if you look on social media, still think that they've been the most complete team. It's not necessarily who they've beaten, although they've gone through some decent opponents. It's but how they've looked, especially the way their defense has played. And by the way, for me, these top four or five, you're really splitting hairs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like there's a huge jump. I mean, Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson and LSU, even Oklahoma, all these teams are right there. So, I mean, for me, it's still somewhat volatile. It could still move around. I have Bama at two. I have Clemson right now at three. I have LSU at four. LSU could be two. Alabama could be three, Clemson could be two. So whatever you have, more power to you, and however you break it down. I have Oklahoma just right there. Such an impressive win. We learned a lot about their defense and the way they played last week against Sam Ellinger. And man, Wisconsin is proving that, that they have one of the best defenses in the country. And, you know, I think Jack Cohn's doing a nice job of giving them enough in their passing game to prevent people from loading up on Jonathan Taylor. The great news is all these teams we're talking about, many of them play each other, so it's going to work itself out eventually. But those six for me are just right there, and no matter how you have them ranked, I have no issue at all, whatever direction you might go.
I'm with you, because honestly, your approach to the rankings, it's really for fan bases, right? It's for them to discuss all week long in a bar or over dinner, or even on talk radio, because I'm with you with Oklahoma and Wisconsin at 5 and 6 on the outside, the same way with the AP poll. I've got LSU 1, Bama 2, Ohio State 3, Clemson 4, and honestly, all this stuff's going to be sorted out like you talked about, because October 26th, for example, Ohio State faces Wisconsin. And we're going to figure something out there, right? And and then they may play against, again in the Big Ten championship, right?
Yep.
The way all this is trending. Just give us an idea, because leading into it, we were talking about the hype and what it was like Saturday night, and for you and your experiences in the past, what was it like this past Saturday night in that environment in Baton Rouge leading up to the game, and then what you saw?
Well, I it's one of my favorite places ever since I've been on College Game Day. You know, you love to go to Baton Rouge for a night game on a Saturday night. College Game Day there, the build up, you know, for, like we talked last week, Thursday and Friday. There's some venues you go to and you go to your hotel and you don't even know there's a game on Saturday. And there's other places you go to and you're thinking, if you didn't know anything about football and you were dropped into this town, you'd be like, what in the world is going on? You know, it's one of those kind of
The only thing going on.
I mean, it is so much excitement. And again, I don't care if you're a grandma or you're a grandpa or you're a mom or a dad or a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a small child, you are dialed in to the game. Like, you're not like going to the game because it's the place to be seen. You're going to the game because on 3rd and 7, you know, are we going to rush with 3? Or are we going to bring those linebackers on the blitz? Like, they are dialed in. So I love that about them. I love that everybody's kind of all in on it. And I love that Florida came in there. And Dan Mullen, who continues to just the respect that I think he's gaining nationally as a quarterback coach and how he gets his guys ready, just every week gets higher and higher and higher. For the respect, at least I have for him, I'm thinking, all right, how's Kyle Trask? Mm-hmm. How's he going to go into this scene with, you know, a decent offensive line, but not the best offensive line you've ever had? Can't really run the ball that great. How are they going to do against LSU in this atmosphere? And man, right away, I don't know how many times they took the ball 75 yards and scored and hung in there and battled and just everything you could hope for. In a game like that, where Burrow, of course, and this new Joe Brady offense and what they're doing with that side of the ball, very tough to stop. And you don't want to get, you know, it's like if you do a 100-meter race and you give LSU a 50-meter head start, you're never going to catch up to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to let Burrow get too far out there by 14 or 21. You're never going to catch them. And so Florida, to their credit, they hung in there back and forth, and then finally, of course, LSU was able to pull away and win the game, but it was awesome. Just the buildup of it was great. The game itself was incredibly competitive, and I think people walk out of that game continuing to be impressed by LSU. Everybody's pointing to November 9th in Tuscaloosa, and don't forget they have Auburn before that, but the game everyone's talking about is Burrow and Tua, right?
Yep.
And also, I walked out of there thinking, my gosh, Florida is a much better team than I think many people want to give them credit. They beat Auburn at home. They turn around the very next week and go into one of the toughest atmospheres in the country and go right there to the end, come up a little bit short. And after Georgia losing to South Carolina, I don't know, the SEC East, and of course, they'll play eventually in Jacksonville. The SEC East has a little bit of a different feel to it right now.
It's wide open. It feels like, when I say wide open, you look at the idea of Florida. You know, before this weekend, I thought that there was a gap there between Georgia and Florida, a little gap there from 1 and 2. But now I'm like, I'm not sure. And I actually would favor Florida, especially with that being at a neutral site in Jacksonville, and that environment is fantastic. My biggest concern for Florida is, all right, now you got to go on the road at South Carolina and deal with Muschamp, and Muschamp will find a way to keep that team motivated. We'll see what, you know, their quarterback situation is a little beat up, South Carolina, but how will they respond after that emotional win, and how will Florida respond after, you know, back-to-back weeks with all of them at LSU?
Third week in a row, you got to have your fastball working. You know, there's just no chance to kind of let your guard down at all. You go to Columbia, you better be ready to play.
And that's life in the SEC. And LSU, you mentioned at Mississippi State, and then they got Auburn at home. Did you learn anything about, you know, we rave about the offense, and Burrow was really good, and I just love the aggressiveness of that entire
approach.
Playbook, right?
Like,
they don't hold back. But are you concerned at all about this defense and where this defense is at? Because it feels like, you know, November 9th showdown is going to be in the 40s on both sides. Have you learned anything about LSU's defense?
I think one of the things that happens, and you see it in the Big 12 all the time, but once you commit to an aggressive five-receiver, up-tempo, spread, we're going to stick it in your ear kind of approach offensively, you're going to have to deal with, it's going to be a challenge on your defense. I mean, the Big 12 has been dealing with that for years. That's why what Oklahoma did last Saturday to Texas was so impressive. They didn't shut them down, but they made it very, very challenging for them every possession. LSU, I think, is going to get healthier. I think they're trying to figure things out. Right now, they're playing two true freshman corners. You know, you have Delpit back there. Stingley is back there. And I think they'll get better as they kind of grow together with that group. I think they've faced some decent offenses, you know, the way these offenses have tried to attack them. The reality is, for years, LSU has had defensive linemen that can just take a game over, right? You just close your eyes and think of some of the great LSU defenses. They don't have that right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've got big physical guys, but they don't have record, like a game record that can just take an offensive lineman, throw him, and get into the backfield. So Dave Aranda's having to kind of be creative with when he blitzes and how he blitzes. And so that's the reality of who they are right now. And so their strength is the back end, the athletic ability in the secondary, and trying to get you where you can maybe play left-handed if they catch you with the right blitz. Getting into the games against Auburn and then eventually Alabama, I think it's going to be Burrow is going to have to outscore most of the better teams that they play. It's just kind of where they are right now. And I think the commitment to this up-tempo offense has really helped them because it's a new mindset and it's working out great. But they're not – I don't think against the better teams they'll face, they're not going to be able to stop them.
We'll be back in a minute with the best thing that Herbie saw over the weekend. But first, a word from Allstate, because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today. Now back to the show.
Every week I get the chance to ask you the best thing you saw on Saturday, and I think you can make a case that that was probably Baton Rouge in that environment, the biggest win LSU and what they did against Florida. But the most surprising thing, and we brought it up a couple times, would you say how Georgia played out in that offense against South Carolina?
Yeah, I'd have to say that. First, let me just say this. I'm not one to come in on a Monday and say, "Well, Georgia, oh my gosh, what is going on?" It's college football. Every team is going to have that game.
Mm-hmm.
Every team, you know, maybe not Alabama, but most teams have the game. Clemson had one. You know, I don't want to take anything from North Carolina, but you just have a game where, you know, you hope to win. For whatever reason, the guys aren't inspired. You're not playing the way you're capable of playing. You're not executing. You're not putting the ball in the end zone. I mean, they had 30 first downs. Mm-hmm. They had almost 500 yards of offense, right? I mean, yep. they had four turnovers. It's just one of those games. That one kid had three picks from yeah. South Carolina.
He had two coming in his career, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's just you just hope to find a way. When you're in the midst of that, if you're a fan, especially the players and coaches, but you know you don't want to admit it, but you know you don't have it. And the team on the other side, they have it. They're making their season by beating you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And so you just hope to either find a way to win it late in regulation or get it into overtime and win it. And they even had their chances there and could not close the door. And they end up having one of those losses that Clemson had one late against Pitt a few years ago, and it woke them up. And they kind of looked in the mirror, and instead of pouting, they said, no way, we're not doing this. And they became a different team and went on to win a national title. I think that was in 2016 with Deshaun. And so what is Georgia going to do with this? It's not like they're a bad team now. I mean, we had them all in our top six yep. going into yep. last week. Mm-hmm. So where do they go from here? I don't think you have to change a lot. I'm still concerned with their dinking and dunking in the pass game. I don't think people fear their vertical pass game. And so I think safeties and defensive backs, they're coming up tight and they're trying to take away Swift and the quick passes from Jake Fromm. I noticed it in most of the Notre Dame game until maybe in the second half, latter part of the second half, they started to kind of push the ball down the field and had some success with it. But I think that to me is the biggest thing with Georgia. Can they develop a downfield passing game to go along with Swift and, you know, that intermediate and short, quick passing game? Because right now, I don't think people fear the vertical pass game of Georgia's.
Yeah, two things that, you know, we discussed, after the game a couple of times during our halftime shows is that Fromm, the Georgia team is 0-5 now when Fromm throws the ball at least 30 times. And that just tells you that that's not the bread and butter of the team. And he chucked the ball 51 times, a career high. So when you can't run, and they had 173 yards on the ground, and I'm sorry, but when you have a backfield like that that's as talented as they are, and you run the ball 43 times, you expect them to crack at least 200 yards.
Right.
And then the idea that, like you said, it's okay to stumble once, because we haven't seen teams penalized, at least teams that we feel like are in that tier one, penalized if they lose once. In the college football playoff era, they get the opportunity to come back, and it's sitting there for Georgia. If they beat Florida, they win the East, they go to Atlanta, and if they beat the SEC West team, they're winning the SEC championship, and they're in the playoff conversation again. And you're not removing them from a top four spot if they win the East and they potentially beat an undefeated Georgia team or Alabama team or an undefeated LSU yeah. team. You're not taking them out of the playoff.
No, but I want to add this to what you just said about their running game, because I think it all plays hand to hand. The reason they're not running the football right now the way you'd expect with Swift, I wouldn't say, well, it's the offensive line. And, you know, they can be more physical at the line of scrimmage. To me, if I don't fear that you have Mecole Hardman or Ridley or mm-hmm. somebody that can make me have to be careful, if I don't fear your passing game, I'm going to put my safeties at about 7, 8, 9 yards, 10 yards max, and they're going to be coming downhill because we respect Swift. The one thing we respect is Fromm's ability to throw accurate. He's going to make some accurate throws, back shoulder fades, crossing routes. But do you fear Georgia throwing it 50 yards over your head right now?
No.
No.
It's a great point.
So if I don't fear that, like with Joe Burrow, do you fear that? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
With Tua, do you fear that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So I'm a little bit gun shy on, let's try to put a shell on this offense. Let's just try to keep an umbrella, everything in front of us. Let's not give up the big one. And therefore, you can run. You can run the ball when teams approach. If I don't fear that, man, let's act like it's the red zone. Well, the reason it's hard to execute in the red zone, because everything's tight, right? Everything's congested. Well, teams right now are playing Georgia like it's the red zone. They're really tightening up and not worried about the vertical pass game. So I think if you see Georgia start to improve, I think it has to start there. They've got to take some shots. They've got to hit some big plays, make safeties and defensive backs back up. Then you can get back to Swift. Then you can get back to that short passing game. But right now, I think that's the biggest thing, that the area that I think they have to grow.
They have Kentucky at home this coming weekend, then the bye, and then the showdown in Jacksonville against Florida. And then keep an eye, November 16th at Auburn. And Auburn's coming off a bye. Yep. So, I mean, if you look at their November schedule, November 2nd, they got Florida. Florida's coming off a bye. Now, Georgia's coming off a bye. But then they got November 9th, Missouri. Missouri's coming off a bye. Then they got Auburn. Auburn's coming off a bye. And that's on the Plains. So we're not just saying this is going to be easy for them to win the East. They've got some challenges, but they've got to figure this out quickly against Kentucky.
As we sit here right now, 7 weeks in, I would pick Florida to win the East.
I'm with you.
I think Missouri's still a factor. You know, they have done a heck of a job. I know they had a devastating injury to Cole Garrett. You know, not just a great player, but the heart and soul of that defense. We'll see how that affects them. Barry Odom's a great defensive mind as a head coach. But as we look down the stretch of games, they've got Vandy, they got Kentucky, and then they get a bye, and then they go to Athens. And you know, you're sitting there at 7-1 after losing to Wyoming and having a little egg on your face. Mm-hmm. Everybody thinking, so much for Missouri. Give them credit with Kelly Bryant. They've kind of settled back in. Big win over Ole Miss, and you know, you'd expect them to be able to take care of Vandy and Kentucky. And then it's showdown back-to-back weeks where they go to Athens and then they get Florida at home.
We'll be back in a minute. Herbie tells us about the most disappointing thing he saw this weekend. But first, a word from Carhartt. You know who works hard? Rookies! Sure, they make mistakes, but no one's got more to prove. Knowing each day's another opportunity to outwork them all and earn the respect they deserve. Point is, no one outworks a rookie. That's why after 130 years, Carhartt is still approaching each day with the passion and work ethic of a company that's 130 years young. Same hunger, same determination, same giant chip on the shoulder. And in the same way a rookie needs to work hard to earn the respect of their peers, everything Carhartt makes has to keep earning the respect of the hardworking people who wear it. That's why Carhartt still works like a rookie. And why Carhartt will keep outworking them all for the next 130 years, too. Visit Carhartt.com/CFB to learn more and shop this season's hardest working gear. Now back to the show. Is there a disappointment from the weekend that we're not discussing right now that you were like, wow, I expected a little bit more? Did we discuss that already with that Georgia offense?
Well, I think Georgia has to be the one that stands out where it's obvious disappointment. I think beyond that, I don't know if it's more impressed with Wisconsin or more devastated with Michigan State. Michigan State lost in Columbus, but they showed a pulse offensively, right? With Brian Lewerke, and boy, he missed a couple open guys, but you know, they executed at times. They go to Madison the next week, 7 first downs, 30 rushing yards. And the Badgers, that's why I think it's more about Wisconsin being really good. But I think if there's anything that going into the weekend, everybody, all of us thought Wisconsin's going to win this game, but boy, they're going to have to earn it. This is going to be a hard fought physical game. And Wisconsin didn't get that memo. They went out and just blew Michigan State out. And so that would probably be one that would fit the bill for me of disappointing. Expected them to lose, but thought they would at least fight and compete a little bit better.
Yeah, and you just got to wonder with D'Antonio, you know, he's under fire. Ton of questions about reshuffling that coaching staff, and they can't figure out the offense. And coming into the season, we knew that was going to be their weakness in trying to figure things out because their defense was outstanding. But now coming off a 7-6 season, in 2016, they were 3-9. He's under, you know, a ton of pressure. And let's also recognize that he changed that program And they were, when you look at where they were lined up, they were always competing with Ohio State and Michigan. And there's been a drop off when it comes to the talent that they can get in to East Lansing, especially on the offensive side. So there's a ton of questions for the Spartans. For me, there is no question about this Wisconsin defense. The stat that I love over the weekend is that defense has given up 4 touchdowns. They've scored 4 touchdowns and they've got 4 shutouts in 6 games.
Yes. I never heard of that.
It's incredible.
4 shutouts in 6 games. Jim Leonard, the defensive coordinator, former player who was the ultimate overachiever for Wisconsin and then into the NFL as an undersized guy, great defensive back, great punt returner, just a gamer, has become one of the top defensive coaches in the country. Last year, they had a ton of injuries. Everybody had some fun at their expense. Come back a year later, have more veterans now, have a lot of guys that played because they weren't necessarily ready last year, but through injury they had to play. Now they all come back. Now they're playing with a chip on their shoulder, getting back to that Wisconsin brand. All the talk in August, Nebraska in the West, Nebraska, Nebraska. People forgot about that brand and that DNA and the culture that Wisconsin prides himself on. And I don't know if anybody, including Paul Christ, expected Wisconsin to just be this good on both sides of the ball and be a complete team. Really setting up for October 26th in Columbus, Badgers, Buckeyes. That will be a big-time showdown.
Yeah, it will, and I can't wait. And you brought up a great point, too, Cone throwing the ball a little bit to, you know, hey, let's get something on tape to keep other defensive coordinators honest when they play against us and finding the tight ends. And early on, you saw that. And then when you get that lead, that defense can feast on anything around them. Their linebackers are really, really active. I like what we're seeing. Speaking of linebackers, let me tell you, I know Oklahoma takes a lot of heat, but Kenneth Murray really he pops on tape as that guy who is all over the field for the Sooners. And you brought it up a little bit earlier about how they impressed you on what they did against Texas and that offense. But Murray, man, he's one of I can't get my eyes off of him. I mean, he's number 9 and he's literally everywhere. And he brings that attitude in that system that changes so many things for the Sooners and their outlook.
Well, I think because I'm glad we touched on Oklahoma here, because everybody expected, myself included, this to be a shootout. OU, Texas, you had Sam Ellinger and Jalen Hurts. You know, which quarterback's going to have the ball last? Probably going to be the team that wins. I think that was what most people anticipated. And, you know, watching that game unfold, watching how early in that game, we wondered, okay, Oklahoma, Alex Grinch, they look good. Now we'll see. And to their credit, this looks like a team that's tired of being talked about, a defense that's tired of being made fun of. Oh boy, if Oklahoma just had a defense, boy, they could be a real threat to the playoff, right? And the last couple of years, they've gotten into the playoff and they've always had to outscore people, right? And now, a lot of those guys played on those teams those last couple years, led by Kenneth Murray. I mean, he's been right in the middle, even as a freshman, when they played Georgia in the Rose Bowl, he's right in the middle of that. And you know how these guys are talented players to hear all that? So they come into this game with a newfound confidence in Alex Grinch's system, a new belief. It's almost like, now let's play ball. Now what do you have for us kind of thing? Throw the ball in the middle of the field. Let's see who the better man is. And, man, they're getting off of blocks. They're attacking. They just look like a totally different group. You know, I thought in the middle, Gallimore, who another guy that's played a lot of football, he's looking aggressive. Looks like he's dropped some weight. Looks quicker. But you're right, the leader of that right in the middle, Murray, they're blitzing him more. He's getting to the quarterback. Secondary's holding up in coverage. So they gave up 27, but I think their defense – had a lot to do with winning this game. This was not just Jalen Hurts and the OU offense. By the way, CeeDee Lamb is a freak, just an absolute devastating player. He has been for 3 years, but I thought his performance, I think he had 10 catches, 171 yards, 3 touchdowns. It was almost like when Hurts needed a play, go to number 2 and let him do his thing, and he did. But, yeah, that was a fun one. And I think OU had a chance to kind of send a message to the rest of the Big 12.
Yeah, and if you think this is just going to be a rematch here at the end of the season like we saw last year with Oklahoma and Texas, think again here now. Because Texas's schedule, they got TCU next week, and then, I mean, October 26th. But in November, it gets tricky. They're at Iowa State, and the game I got circled, November 23rd at Baylor. And don't sleep on what Matt Rhule is doing. Now, Matt's got some stuff in front of him against Oklahoma State on the road where they're dogs this coming weekend. But there's a stretch run there where Baylor in back-to-back weeks, they host Oklahoma November 16th and then Texas. I just love it. I love what he is doing. They're number 18 in the country at 6-0. And there was some controversy and, you know, Big 12 officials, the referees apologized for that missed call against Texas Tech in overtime. But you cannot deny how good this defense plays for the Bears and the threat that Baylor could get into the championship game here, considering the way they're playing.
Well, I think even Iowa State's not necessarily out of it yet.
Absolutely.
You know, Iowa State's kind of hanging around there with Matt Campbell, Baylor with Matt Rhule. I mean, we need to send Tom Rinaldi down there for a feature. I mean,
yes.
You know what I mean? Think about what he inherited. It's one thing to look at Baylor right now, back up in the top 20. I think they're 18 this week. They're undefeated at 6-0. This program was like on the brink of the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
They're in shambles. Matt Rhule had his choice. He had Oregon out there. He had Baylor out there. Decides to go to Baylor and leaves Temple. You followed him very closely. You know what he's made out of as a coach. Infectious personality.
Yep.
Tough guy. Demands doing it the right way. And his players clearly have kind of fallen in line. It's incredible to think where they were to where they are today, winning games, but it's the kind of the culture of that program, and they get their hands full this week against Oklahoma State, to be sure. But they're playing good defense, as good as anybody right now in the Big 12. If they get by the Cowboys, which again, we'll have to see if they can.
Yep.
But if they're able to get by Oklahoma State, I think they're home West Virginia at TCU. And then the big one with OU at home. So you imagine if they are able to get through Oklahoma State, they're undefeated.
Yeah.
More than likely playing Oklahoma.
Yeah. Which would be incredible. And then you get that at home. And that's the one thing. I want to see Oklahoma's offense against a stout defense and see how that plays out. And by, you know, mid-November, where's Oklahoma's offense as they move along and Jalen Hurts' comfort level and CeeDee Lamb? Good stuff here. Before we let you go, I want to know what you can't wait to see next week. And we got a handful of games like Clemson, Louisville, Florida, South Carolina, Oregon, Washington. I have no idea what to make of Washington and try to figure them out. Baylor, Oklahoma State, Arizona State, Utah, Michigan, Penn State. Is there a game that you got circled and you want to learn a little bit more? We'll be back in a minute as we ask Kirby about the biggest matchup this coming weekend. But first, a word from Goodyear. Sometimes for inspiration, you just have to look up. For more than 60 years, the Goodyear blimp has fueled greatness on the gridiron by providing aerial coverage of some of the most legendary moments in college football history. When the Goodyear blimp rises above a stadium, it inspires players to reach higher and rise to the challenge of the game's biggest moments. Now it's your turn to go further with Goodyear. Discover tires made to rise above the rest. Learn more at Goodyear.com. Goodyear, more driven. Now back to the show.
I want to see Michigan on the road in the whiteout and how far along Shea Patterson and this offense really is. Big stage. College game day will be there. It's the ABC Saturday night game.
Yep.
It's the whiteout. I mean, if you ever want to get a litmus test on where you are, and I actually called the game a couple years ago that was a whiteout, and it did not go well. Saquon had a big night. Michigan couldn't do anything offensively, and I'm sure there some of the older players remember that trip very well. And so here they come into the whiteout again, game day's there again, ABC stage again, and not to mention some of the difficulties that they've had to overcome with Josh Gattis and this new offense. So it's almost like a do-over for them. And just, let's see, after the way they played against Wisconsin on the road, how much have they improved since that game to go on the road now against a very, very good Penn State defense and in that atmosphere. The other one, Florida and South Carolina. It's an early kick, noon kick in Columbia. The Gators, you and I talked about a little earlier, interesting couple weeks with Auburn at home, very emotional win. A week later, go to Death Valley, battle, come up a little bit short. Now you're taking on South Carolina, SEC East game. Of course, the Gamecocks knock off Georgia. That's an interesting game in many, many different levels, not only for Florida, but for also for South Carolina. So those two kind of stand out to me.
And I can't stress enough, you brought it up last week too, the environment of Death Valley, and you compared it to the whiteout. The whiteout is so crazy at night. I've been to a couple of whiteout experiences, and the place is shaking. And and that's a good thing, and you're going to see that in prime time. I know you're going to have a blast with that.
I'm just scrolling down here, looking at all these games. Temple and SMU is a great game.
Yes,
Temple and SMU is a great game. Oregon and Washington is a great game in Seattle. Washington, of course, had a big win against a late game against Arizona. Found a way to win and scored a lot of points, 51 points. Now here comes Oregon. Oregon's still thinking about trying to win the North, still trying to get to the Pac-12 championship, still trying to keep their hopes alive for a playoff. And Washington, obviously, desperate after two losses already to try to get a win there in a rivalry game. And then the other one that stands out, we talked about Baylor and Oklahoma State. But out west, Herm Edwards just keeps winning football games. They're always close. They seem to find ways to win. And here comes another big test after a win last week. Now they got to deal with Utah on the road in Salt Lake. Last week they beat Mike Leach, who was off of a bye week, kind of put all his chips in the middle of the table, and Herm found a way to win that game 38-34. And now they get a chance to take on Kyle Whittingham and the Utes on the road, which is never easy. And everybody's team before the season started was Utah to win the Pac-12. So find out if Herb can keep this magic going against Utah.
Yeah, and Jaden Daniels was fantastic at the end of that game against Washington State. The one thing that stands out too, I mean, they're big dogs on the road at Utah, as they should be, but that actually works in Herm's favor. He is a really, really good coach when his team is an underdog, a big underdog. Now, we've talked about it all week. I love that we get the chance to do this. We hype it up on the other podcasts as well, where our listeners get the opportunity to ask you a question. We've got a couple of them here. Good one here from Muggsy saying, out of the group of five teams that are playing well right now, whose stock are you buying or selling? He's brought up Boise State, SMU, Cincinnati, Appalachian State. He did bring up Memphis as well. And, you know, Memphis coming off that loss to Temple. But when you look at the group of five, which one are you buying right now that you think you'll like their stock?
I felt Memphis before we came into the top 25, or before we came into this past weekend. Mm-hmm. Of course, they lost a tough one on the road at Temple. I would probably lean towards Boise State, probably give them, the credit and the recognition. I think that, you know, I don't know if they're necessarily going to have a big test as they've got a few games maybe that could give them a little bit of a challenge, but I would probably give Boise State the edge after Memphis went down. The SMU story has been amazing. Mm-hmm. I think they have a little bit of a bigger platform because of some of the teams that they'll get a chance to play in conference play. But I know Felica loves Appalachian State. You know, they're still undefeated. Got into the top 25 this week at number 24. It's incredible. That program just, you know, before they were just, you know, one double A and
I love
just
it.
Trying to pull off upsets.
Yeah.
Now here they are. They're playing such good football, being recognized now as a top 25 program. So that's incredible what Scott Satterfield helped create. Now, of course, goes to Louisville and what they continue to do this year in 2019, sitting there at 5-0.
Yeah, meanwhile, too, Louisville, you're seeing a completely different team when it comes to the attitude and the energy, right?
You know, go to a bowl game.
Yes. What a turnaround for them.
Yeah.
All right, we got another question. Cavs in three. That's the handle. Over the years of covering college football, I'm sure you've met your fair share of household name high school football coaches. Who are some of the great ones you've run into?
Oh, my gosh. That's a tough one. I don't get a chance to travel and meet the high school coaches. I'm just not a huge recruiting guy.
Mm-hmm.
I've certain programs that you follow because they produce a lot of players and they win a lot of games. But I have not, it's not part of my, part of my traveling is not really meeting the high school coaches at all.
Well, so Herbie, considering, you know, you've got all that time on your schedule during the week.
You know, I will say this, my high school coach, who's retired, he's in his 80s now, but I'm a huge high school football guy.
Yeah.
I think taking 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old boys and making them commit and sacrifice and work hard and miss out on a lot of other things that maybe their buddies that aren't playing football get a chance to do. I think you learn a lot about work ethic and a lot about sacrifice and perseverance and getting knocked down and getting back up. There's so many incredible life lessons and values that you learn in high school football. So I am a huge high school football advocate, but I just don't know a ton of high school coaches.
Yeah, and honestly, it's a good question, but to be fair to you, you're traveling, you're always on site the day before on a Friday night, the day before college game day, on site in a college town. So it makes it near impossible to be able to say, hey, I'm going to go just randomly check out what the high school schedule is
in
this town, right?
I will, you know, from time to time go watch my boys play on Friday nights. But like I said, if I didn't have my job, I'm sick enough kind of guy that no matter what town I lived in, I would probably go to the local high school football game because I love the band. I love the feel of a Friday night. I just growing up in Ohio, it's kind of part of your way you're raised.
Yeah.
You know, you go to the high school football game and you watch this matchup, watch this player. Been hearing a lot about him, so I love it. But yeah, you're right. I don't get a chance to really dial in on a lot of the coaches.
Yeah, and real quick here, what was that like? The challenge for you while your kids are playing high school football and you're traveling on a Friday night, or you're traveling on a Friday? How did you juggle that? I mean, are you getting the opportunity to FaceTime? Are you watching video after the games? Like, what was that challenge like for you?
It's tough, you know, cause you're a dad first.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been very, very fortunate, that when my boys were in sixth, seventh, eighth grade, I approached ESPN and I said, listen, if my boys ever play on Friday nights, I'd really love the opportunity to be able to fight, cause I'm always going to show up over prepared for any show that I do. As long as I'm prepared and dialed in, I'd really love a chance to be able to go back and watch them play. And it was Lee Fitting, and he said, yeah, you know, if as long as it doesn't affect what you're doing with work. And so part of the reason I don't have a voice right now is not just from the work that I do on game day and calling the games, but this past week I flew from Baton Rouge back to Nashville on Friday after all my work, right? You know, tape some Sports Center hits, do our production meetings, meet with LSU coaches and players. And then I flew back from Baton Rouge back to Nashville. Watched my son Zach play in a big rivalry game against Brentwood Academy, and then hugged him after the game, and they had a big win. And got back and flew back to Baton Rouge, got in about 1 in the morning, and got up at 5:30
wow.
and went over to do game day. And and when you go to a high school football game, you can't really just sit there calmly.
Uh-huh.
So you're like, I'm trying not to yell and cheer. But it was such a good game, I couldn't help myself. And so I show up Saturday, and I'm like, man, I can't talk. I haven't even started my job yet.
Uh-huh.
I already don't have a voice. And so I had the hot tea going, and I got through game day, and then more hot tea on the bus Saturday, and then got through the game. And it's going to take till Wednesday probably till I get it back. But, man, those are moments and memories because they do have – live streaming, so that, you know, if I don't make it back, I can at least watch the games. But I just want to be there for them, you know, and do anything I can to be a part of their lives and what they're if they were in the band, if they're playing football, if whatever it is. That's the beauty of being a dad is to be able to enjoy you know, their moments and what they do. So very, very, very fortunate to be able to get back with the job that I have to be able to see them.
That's good stuff, because you're never going to get that time back,
right?
Those moments, right?
Yeah, for yeah. sure.
And, you know,
sure.
great questions here. And if you want to ask Herbie a question, leave a 5-star review. You may get the chance to ask Herbie that question. Put that question in the comment section. The best questions will make the air. Herbie, have a good time. Cannot wait for this weekend and that environment with the whiteout and Happy Valley. Looking forward to talking to you. Hopefully you have a little bit of a voice for Tuesday's segment on SportsCenter at 6 p.m. Thanks, buddy.
Always look forward to it, man. Thank you, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Big thanks to Kirk Herbstreit for joining us here to get his thoughts on the weekend's biggest storylines. Also want to thank our sponsors, Allstate, Carhartt, and Goodyear. And our producer, Taylor Schwenk, on the other side, doing a fantastic job. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want more, all you have to do is subscribe to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollack. And, of course, remember to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. We do appreciate it. And want to remind our listeners as well, these questions that you have for them, they're great. Leave a 5-star review. You may get the chance to ask Herbie your question. Put that in the comment section, and the best questions will make the air. Ahead on Wednesday, Pollack will join us. And let me tell you, he texted me this morning. It is Monday morning about some of the tape he's going over. That's how jacked up he is about what he saw from week 7. He's going to join us, break some stuff down for us, along with Ivan Maisel, and they'll take a look at the best of the week and the players you should be talking about to impress your friends. That'll do it for us here. Until then, we'll talk to you on Wednesday. Thank you.